chicks and living with some people next time round. Alice, John Keane has put a week in as seeking advice from various experts on foreign affairs policy. One of those is Jim Bolger, who's going to engage in this process. Do you think that he needs to be careful? Is there a conflict of interest given that he's the chair of the New Zealand Investment Council? Do you see a conflict of interest with these people?
Well, firstly, I'm not aware that he has said he is engaging in the process. Secondly, as Prime Minister, I've enjoyed a good working relationship with Jim Bolger, and I would hope that would continue.
He said today, he told us today that he was happy to work in a think tank with John Key.
I'd want to hear exactly what Mr. Bolger's words were, but what I can say is that since he left politics, he has worked first as New Zealand ambassador, including for a period during our government in Washington. I've worked with him in that capacity and worked with him in other capacities since. That's been a good working relationship and I'd expect it to continue.
Are you saying that contribution that he was part of a...
No, you shouldn't draw any inference from that at all. I think any advice would be better than that of Murray McKellen.
So you're quite relaxed about him doing that?
Well, it's Mr. Bolger, the judge. So what I'm saying is that I have enjoyed a good working relationship with him, and I would hope that it would continue.
What do you think it says about Mr. Key's grasp of foreign policy that he needs to surround himself with all the prime ministers and others in Japan?
That's sad, isn't it?
We discussed the housing affordability inquiry, talk from the Nats that they wanted some sort of inquiry, and there seems to be indications coming out of the minister's office this morning that it was being looked at. What's the latest on that?
Well, it's often the case that select committee inquiries shed more heat than light on any given issue. The minister is preparing more advice for cabinet on issues which address housing supply, and we have been proactive with the Hobsonville development, which of course has a significant component of affordable housing in it, proactive on the mortgage insurance guarantee scheme, and proactive in developing the shared equity policy, which is expected to lead to a pilot during this term of government, proactive in working with what's called the third sector, non-governmental organisations and with councils on housing provision and supply, including, of course, buying back in the Auckland City housing to the state stock and supporting the Wellington City to keep its portfolio up to date and viable. So it's been a lot of initiatives around housing supply. Now, other things to be looked at are whether territorial authorities need more planning mechanisms to get affordable housing starts in their area. And there's other issues which can be looked at, such as, for example, whether something like housing trusts that operate in the United Kingdom would be an asset here in developing the third sector. So we're expecting more policy advice from Chris Calder and Housing New Zealand in the coming weeks. It's an area we're very active on.
Have you had any briefing on the Tauraki occupation land for land and the merits of it?
No, I haven't had any briefing on that one at all.
There's been coverage of the Japanese ship being able to get its engines underway again, but speculation about whether it's actually going to leave the territory to continue with whaling. Have you had any briefing on that?
No. One would hope that it was heading north to Japan. This has been a disastrous whaling season for Japan in terms of the grave risks to Southern Antarctic and Antarctic ecology, the possible spill, the death of a crew member, and of course what amounted to pitched battle with one of the project's vessels should surely send a strong signal to Japan that what has happened in the Southern Ocean with the whaling fleet is bad for its international reputation.
Are you concerned that there may be some further conflict though, because the Green vessel is still shadowing the boat as well? Are you concerned that they could have some kind of conflict again?
I would be very concerned if there was more conflict. The conflict further south came largely from the Sea Shepherd vessel, which doesn't seem to be at issue at the moment. It's very dangerous for that kind of thing to be happening in the Southern Ocean, far from where in any viable search and rescue operation in the world.
Speaking of that part of the world as well, the UK government has announced it will donate some money towards the restoration of the explorer's huts there. What's your reaction to that news, and is it too little too late?
As I said, when I went to see Mr. Blair on this and other matters in November and raised the issue of a possible government contribution from Britain for the Antarctic huts, he said to his officials, couldn't we do something? And the discussion that ensued suggested that there was scope for private-public partnership in the United Kingdom around support for the Heritage Project. We take this contribution as an indication of British government's goodwill towards it, and I believe it will be a substantial help in now leveraging contributions from the corporate sector and from philanthropists in the UK.
Are you concerned that they've waited this long, that it's taken kind of pressure from New Zealand and others to get them to actually put their hand in their pocket?
It's been my view that as the major centenary anniversaries come close around the Shackleton and Scott expeditions, that minds would focus in Britain on the importance of Britain being associated with the Heritage, and I think that's what's happened.
We're still well short, aren't we,
of
the amount of money that's needed?
What's important is the indication of goodwill. In a sense, it's seeding money from which you can then get more leverage. It enables the Antarctic Heritage Trust and its friends in the United Kingdom to be working actively. And now as they approach corporate donors and philanthropists and other trusts, they can go with the knowledge that the British government has indicated support.
What are you expecting to discuss with Mr. Ashton tomorrow?
Wherever the British government sees international climate change debate going, the conference in Nairobi late last year was a start of the life in trying to engage with a wider range of countries beyond the developed countries in how to proceed. Our view is that India, China, Brazil, big developing economies have a role to play in reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and it'll be interesting to see what prospects the British government sees for engaging the developing world in that way.
There's a Greenpeace report out today that has quite a few pretty ambitious targets for climate change policy, including that we should have all of our power generated by renewables by 2025. Do you think that's doable?
The draft energy strategy is looking to energy in New Zealand having as its base load a renewable supply with a view to maintaining coal as a standby. At such times, coal technology becomes a lot cleaner, then no doubt the 1,000 years of coal supply that we have becomes of more interest. But certainly we're very intent on promoting renewables as the generation of choice.
But we wouldn't be entirely renewable.
Well, the base load could aspire to be 100% renewable. That's what the energy strategy is about. But you do need a fallback in times of drought, low levels of hydro lakes, particularly cold winter, etc.
Are you disappointed that the United Nations is sending 92 Fijian soldiers to the Sinai and the Sudan?
Well, we've made our views clear on this before. We have advocated to the UN that the strongest signal it could send to the military command in Fiji is not to deploy their forces. Unfortunately, we haven't had support for that from other large and powerful countries.
Is there anything more that you can do to put pressure on Fiji at this stage to speed up that transition that looks to be taking at least 3 to 4 years now?
The next event to look for is the Forum of Foreign Ministers meeting, and they'll discuss the Eminent Persons Group report, which is a credible report and puts a time frame on, which is really at the outer level of what we would consider acceptable. 18 months to 2 years for elections. We think it could be done much, much sooner than that. But the Fiji government, interim government, would have to engage with the forum around that report. And I can't see foreign foreigners as necessarily being very impressed about a four-year timeline. I think the very serious risk Fiji runs is a great damage to its tourism industry. I understand that while the marketing campaign in New Zealand and Australia produced some numbers of people going to Fiji, it was at such cut price deals that there wasn't a lot of money in it. And secondly, the convention conference trade has been very severely affected. So not bright times looking forward for Fiji tourism. And then Fiji is also looking to the European Union for substantial support with the kind of restructuring that needs to go on with the sugar industry. And the EU is starting to invoke the procedures under the aid agreement, which Fiji is part of, which does emphasise the need to have democratic government. So if Fiji starts its nose at that breaking about the donor, it could be causing itself considerable damage.
Does the draft New Zealand aid policy you mentioned earlier take into account the recent developments in places like Fiji?
Now, it's a more generic statement about what kind of intervention is a chance of working.
Winston Peters' review is called the Compulsory Savings, Retirement Savings. What's your review of that?
Winston's always favoured compulsory savings. When he was treasurer back in the early 90s, there was a whole referendum run around it. And the particular proposal that went to referendum went down to about 92%. And it's been really no debate about it ever since. I haven't seen any proposal that would convince me right now. It's a road worth going down. We've got a KiwiSaver up and starting on a voluntary basis with a bit of a nudge and a bit of a carrot. 1st of July, and I think we need to see how that settles in.
Does New Zealand have a position on whether it believes Iran is developing nuclear weapons?
We don't know. Who does? The problem is the lack of transparency. And what the international community is asking for is transparency. Open the facilities. Be honest. Give the information. Don't play games with that. And really, the pressure has to go on for full disclosure.
Has the government had any approaches, formally or informally, to contribute to a revamped Carriagebrook in Dunedin for the World Cup rugby, or for a new stadium, which has been talked about?
Not that I'm aware of. I'm not aware of everything.